a world filled with fast-paced living and constant demands on the aging body, it's easy to forget some of the simplest yet most essential elements of our well-being: hydration and nutrients. As you know, when I'm not in the studio recording a podcast or in the gym or out in the scrub hunting, putting rounds down range, I'm somewhere in the world on a security gig, putting in the hard yards, ending up on TikTok. So the legends that get some keep me advancing forward: Jocko Fuel Supplements. More specifically, I've been smashing the Jocko Hydrate Sachets, which helps me replenish my electrolytes and other critical vitamins while boosting energy and supporting recovery. Also, just like my kids, my appetite for veggies goes as far as hot chips from the Colonel. However, every morning I'll mix a scoop of Jocko Greens Jocko Creatine into water, which helps me supplement my lack of and delivers all the nutrients for better gut health, immune support, cognitive function, and physical performance. And not to mention, tastes bloody good. So head over to www.getsome.com.au and use the code ZEROLIMITS all in caps for a discount. I'll leave you with this for the day: hard work, clean fuel, stronger, faster, smarter, better. Let's go.
5-1. It's time for the Zero Limits Podcast, hosted by Australian veterans, chatting with high-charging humans with hectic stories from around the world. We'll give you the motivation to take on whatever life throws at you and the kick to complete any goal you set your mind to. Let's go.
9-3 Bravo, go. Bush Ranger 71, trying to contact you, over. Zero Limits listeners, on today's Zero Limits podcast, I have a guest that is located in Israel. Now, I've watched a lot of the documentaries, a lot of the news clippings he's done. He's been all over social media, really, and especially obviously a lot of news media outlets. Essentially, due to October 7th, the invasion of Israel, he was called into duty as a reservist. This unit, though, however, it's a special forces unit, Duvdevan. No, I said it wrong.
Duvdevan.
That's fine. I got it eventually. Duvdevan. And we'll definitely talk about this down the track and find out a bit more about, you know, what this unit does and obviously what happened post October 7th, which was, from what the world's seen, it was an absolutely disgusting event that occurred. Hopefully, you know, my words, hopefully Hamas gets destroyed and is eliminated off this planet. And, hopefully the world jumps in and helps out, because I'll be first to jump in on board and help out. Also, just quickly, he's a semi-pro basketball player. I was just watching some YouTube before. I'm heavily into my NBA, mate, so we'll definitely talk about a little bit about that. But Shemtov, how you doing, mate?
I'm great. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
No, good, mate. I'm good, mate. Again, really appreciate you coming on the podcast, sharing your story. Again, it's one of those crazy stories, you know. It's just it captivated the world, obviously, just due to the pure evilness that happened on that day and still happening to this day. Which we'll talk about down the track. But before we do, mate, let's get back to the younger days. Let's find out about young Shemtov. You know, mate, run us through. How were you as a kid growing up? You know, schooling, siblings?
So, as you said, my name is Shemtov. The meaning in Hebrew is good name. So you can call me either good name or Shemtov. Yep. I've been called after my great-grandfather, who was an amazing guy. I have two parents, thanks God. I have one brother that is also a private contractor. He's working especially in Africa, in different countries, and he trains the armies over there. He used to be the head of Krav Maga instructors in Duvdevan as well. So he's a big guy. And I have a little sister, and we grew up together, you know, happy family, thanks God. We all are educated, and our parents literally, you know, busting their asses every day so they can provide us whatever we need. And I do appreciate it for them. And, you know, when I was young, I always loved basketball. I started playing since I was 4. And I during the years until age 18, that usually in Israel, that's the age that we are recruited to the army. So in Israel, recruiting, it's like mandatory to give the country 3 years. The girls do too, and it depends if they are fighters or not. And you are literally stopping your life from everything that you like, and it's mandatory to go to the army, do your service, and you know, then in age 21, 22, it depends if you are signing in for more years or stuff, you are starting your life again. So for me, it was a really hard decision when I got to the age of 18, if I do want to go pro with basketball, because thank God I had a talent and my dad really gave everything so I can, you know, train a lot and do whatever so I can be a pro, or, you know, cut the life of like a basketball player and go and do something really meaningful in the army, you know, and serve the country as well as I can. And, you know, it was really a hard decision, a really, really grown up decision. And I decided to leave the basketball behind for a while and go and do something meaningful. And then I started like investigate, what do I want to do? Like, which unit is going to be the coolest, you know? And I was the guy that played Counter-Strike or Battlefield. So I kind of was like really turned on about the like the special forces units. And I came across with the band, and it means cherry in Hebrew. It's a lovely fruit. And I spoke to my guys. I have two friends older than me that served in the unit. And I came to meet them, and they showed me their guns and stuff they're doing and start talking to me. And like on the spot, I was like, okay, I'm going to the band. I don't care what's going to happen. I'm going to be the band. And you know, for me, when I decide something, it's going to happen. Like, this is my mindset. If I want it, it will happen. And that's exactly what happened. So I started. So we have kind of like, you said you served in the parachute. Mm. So in order to get to Duvdevan, you first have to pass a physical test and a mental test to the parachuters. So that's what I did. It's like a 3 days of like tests. So they wake you up, you know, in the middle of the night, in the morning, you got to like do this and that. And I remember you first have to run like 2 kilometers as fast as possible. This is like the first elimination test. And then it's like another 3 days of like, you know, going back and forth, crawling, picking up spot, and et cetera. It was a really long time ago. And then you have the mental test. So you have kind of like an interview with the people from the units, from Duvdevan, from different other special forces, and also from the parachuters. And I remember a couple of months after. So this is happening before you're recruited, when you're like around 17, when you're still in high school. And then I remember getting like a positive answer about you're eligible to Duvdevan. So you're recruited to the parachuters, but you do eligible to Duvdevan. And then in age 18, when I recruited, you have like a, let's say, a harder test. It's called in Hebrew, Gibush Sayarot. So that means like test for the high elite, like to the elite units. And it's like also another 3 days, but way more harder. And then in the end, again, you have an interview. And let's say 4 days after, you have something that called, I don't know how to say it right in English, but let's say it's called a crying ceremony. That means that everybody that was in the test coming and sitting down together. And then it's kind of like in a draft, you know, they told you, okay, team one of Duvdevan, it's Shemto, this, and that. And then I remember that I was, I think, the second or the third one to get picked. And, you know, all the weekend I was so stressed. Like, do I going to get picked? Like, am I going to get picked or not? Like, I think that I had a really great, you know, test period. I gave my everything. And, you know, during the physical test, I wrote on my hand the name of my father, my great grandfather, like all my family members. And every time that I had a slight of a hard action that I was like, come on, like, this is so hard. I look at my hand and I picked a name of one of my family member, and I only thought of him and how good I'm going to do if I'm going to be the army and protect him. And this is what kind of like drove me during the physical test, you know, and thanks God passing it as well. And then we got to the, you know, to the point that we are separated to the parachuters and the elite units of the parachuters and the elite unit of the army. That means Deval and Modlan and different other units. And then we did like a boot camp of, let's say, 3 months. No, 6 months. 6 month boot camp. And then what's like this boot camp is really hard. They're training you like the basic stuff, you know, how to be a soldier, how to be, you know, a ground battle soldier, basically. And I also did like a course of a parachuter. So we literally, how do you say, like parachuting, you know, from one of our, so I did like a 5 times. It's nice, but I never used it. You know, it was just like kind of like a bonus course.
How old were you?
I was 18.
So you're only 18. 18 going through all this training.
Only 18, you know, like all this training and all these hard decisions in age 18. If I'm looking at the state, they have to decide what they want to do in their life in college. Here you are literally going to the army and risk your life literally every day. This is what's going on in Israel, unfortunately. And so it's really a hard decision to take.
How big are the training? How big are the training groups?
Sorry, say it again.
How big are the training groups? You know, how many people are you training with?
Around, so basically to the test came around like, I don't know, 1,000 people. And then each team starting with 30 people. And eventually we ended up in the end of the training with 20, maybe.
So you do your 3 months of the boot camp, so the basic training. And then you move on to a specialized training?
So you have a 3 months of like the boot camp, another 3 months of like an, like a more professional
advanced
boot camp. Advanced boot camp. And then you're going to the unit. So in this like the 6 month boot camp, it's more like, you know, to kind of like train you to be a soldier, how to like think like a soldier. But they do add elements from the unit. So for example, when you woke up in the morning, you got, 2 minutes to do everything and be on uniforms and on vest on everything downstairs. Like since the minute, like since the second you woke up, because this is what do the VAM do? You know, basically we have to be really in alert because we are in an area that something can happen anytime. And we do have like under 2 minutes to be ready on the van with everything. Doesn't matter where you are. And go to this, like the mission. If it's a kidnapped civilian, we're going to come to that. But so I'm going to go back to the, after we finish the 6 months, we are going to the unit. And just a second, my girlfriend asked for the car because she has a sorry for it.
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, you're right, mate. You're right.
Yeah, that's fine. Adari, auto nimca lad Victoria, lad Victory, and can't go. So this is sorry for stopping.
No.
She's a basketball player as well.
Yeah,
she played pro.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice. She needed for a training.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after the 6 months, we went to the unit and this was crazy, bro. Cause at the first day you are coming, you don't know what to expect. You know, you're coming, you're like, kind of like, okay, I did 6 months of boot camp. Like I know how to be a soldier. And then you're coming to a place like, you know, to the, let's say the I League, you know, to the pros league. And I remember the bus stopped and the entrance to the unit. And we're like young and like, you know, with the uniforms and everything. And then from nowhere, around like 60 guys with like, you know, mask and like crazy guns running to you, start shouting at you and like, you got 60 seconds to be like in the, I don't remember when they like, it was kind of like an urban training area. So they ran with us like, yo, 60 seconds, be there. And we are like running, you know, we don't know what to expect. And you're still with the mentality of like boot camp. So you listen to everything they say. And, you know, when we ran there and they start shouting at us. So we are standing in like, kind of like in a structure all together. You know, we are like, we don't know what to expect. And eventually it was all a huge show. You know, they were like warriors that came just to make fun of us because we are like, you know, boot camper. So they're like, you know, they gave us like a leaflet with like instructions. And like all, of course, it was like in a, just a fun way. So they said, you have to delete all your socials. If you cannot go home with blood uniforms, all in fun. Yeah, it never happened. Everybody gonna get AK-47, shotgun, pistol, and you're gonna go with the home with it. Like, you know, you're gonna go home with those weapons. We're like, where the fuck are we? Like, what's going on? And you know, some of them are relatives of my friends. So they kind of like kidnapped them from the structure to one of the like urban training houses and start like doing them like push-ups and like, you know, do some fun stuff because he doesn't know that it is his brother, for example. One of my teammates, his brother was there.
Oh, because
he's
the balaclava.
And like, he was with the mask and everything. Yeah. And he started like kicking him and like do some fun stuff, you know, and people are coming back and like, what happened to you? And he was like, you know, because they are all look at us. And it was hilarious, you know, bro, and like make us do some crazy stuff. And eventually they took up the mask and like, yo, welcome to the unit after the, like, you know, this kind of show. And it was nice. It was nice, to be honest. Like, you know, it was really fun.
What year did you get in?
2012.
2012. So you get in 2012 into the unit. What's happening? Are you just straight into training, straight into preparation, more training, obviously?
Exactly. So it's 6 months more heavy training that is more specialized to our unit. Right now, you know, we had 6 months of like a boot camp and the advanced one. That was just a regular one. And now we are kind of like focusing on what really the unit does, and we train for it. And so I can tell you that, you know, Krav Maga, right, is the Israeli martial art. And, you know, this is one of the, like, let's say the huge test as a soldier in the unit. So in our first Krav Maga workout, you have distance with your trainer, with the coach. And he came, and the first thing that you're doing is literally being on your fist, you know, in like
push-up.
Okay, the word push-up.
Yep.
Yeah, push-up structure for 3 hours without moving. 3 hours on your fist without moving. 3 hours. If you move, you're going to a Superman position. You know what is Superman position? So, you know when Superman is flying?
Yeah.
Perfect. So you put your legs up there on the wall, and then you are on your fist, but like all the weights are on your hand. And if this is what happened, if you are falling and doing something that is not like for the coach, you know, vibes. So 3 hours on your fist. I remember a week that I eat like this. You know, this is the fork, and this is how I can eat because I couldn't open my like my hand. It was like literally closed. So I ate my like breakfast and lunch with closed hand. Looked like so this is how my hand looked like for a week. I couldn't open them.
Yeah, wow.
This is like the first training. This is crazy. I can keep going.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Just quickly, like, give me a rundown exactly what the Duvdeven unit is. You know, obviously, it's counterterrorism, but what do they mainly focus on?
So it's, as you said, it's a special force that mainly focuses on the counterterrorism. We specialize in urban areas, really like populated density, because we learn how to, how to maneuver and do the stuff that we do arrest the bad guy and we do save the civilians in meantime. So basically we are specialized in the West Bank. This is our own Judea and Samaria. If you want to ask Israeli, you're going to say Judea and Samaria, but internationally people call it the West Bank. So this is our home. This is our specialized. We know the West Bank like my, you know, my back on my hand. Like I know exactly where every city is, streets, like everything. This is what we've been taught because we need to be really pros when we come to the ground, eventually to the missions. Usually we come at night to surprise, you know, the enemies. We did arrest so many crazy terrorists that you cannot even imagine. People that did really, sorry for the word, fucked up things, like killing parents in front of the children's eyes. Like literally, you know, one of my operation was to arrest a terrorist that came to a regular car of family that came from an holiday evening, like, you know, from dinner. And they were in the car and they came like two cars and they blocked them. They shoot the parents in front of the kids. The kids were like 4 and 5. And thanks God, one of them was so moron to shoot the other terrorist, so they had to leave the area. But and the two kids are like orphans right now. And this is happening, unfortunately, almost on a daily basis. Literally 2 hours before we started this, the conversation here, the podcast, like a criminal, I think it was a terrorist, yeah, that came and literally shot on a van that was driving to one of the civilians area, like one of the communities in the Judea and Samaria. Thanks God nobody's hurt, but the IDF is still running like a shooting action against it, and it still didn't over. It's been 2 hours and they're still shooting each other and trying to like close the circle on it. And this is currently happening as we speak.
So you get in 2012. Do you have any, like, what's going on in Israel at this stage? Obviously, before this is just before 2014 as well.
Yeah. So, sorry.
What are you getting told? Like, what, you know, obviously you're getting these intelligence briefs. You're doing a lot of these direct action type style missions. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. So basically, I will go over how it's going on, like the daily basis there. So we wake up in the morning, we do some training, you know, going to the range or Krav Maga or like, you know, gym and stuff like that. And then during lunch, we are getting like our first conversation, our first brief about what's going on tonight, just like small details. Later on this day, we are getting like a really, let's say, a more deeper brief about the terrorists, family members, area, what to expect, stuff that can happen, what it does. We learn his face, IDs, all the IDs of the family members, how do they look like everything we can, the neighbors. So we are not going to get like, you know, kind of manipulated by them and not hurting like innocent civilians on the way. It's really, really big focus on the guy. And then we are practicing. So we're running a lot of scenarios. For example, a regular one. And then we started shooting. If a family member started shooting at us, if the neighbors are starting shooting at us, like every scenario that can happen, we are practicing it before. So, you know, when we can go to the field, we know exactly how to operate in that case, in this specific case, if it's happened. And then, you know, we are going to sleep for an hour or two, three, and then usually we do work around 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. That's our time. So we're kind of like in a bath, you know, how do you call it? Bath, right? What is it called? Yeah, the animal bath, like that he's like sleeping during the night. He's waking during the night and sleeping during the day. And like Batman.
Yeah.
And this is basically our timeline. And then, you know, we're getting, I cannot be specific as some of that secret, how we get into the village. But we're getting into the village. We do break silently into the house. We don't break into the neighbor. It's really important to say that we do know exactly where the guy is going to be. And we are also something that is really important for the people to know is that we have 100% intelligence on the person and what he did. And we also have like a kind of like, how do you call it? Like a papers from a judge.
Yep.
That says, listen, like this guy did this and that. Yep. And we got the evidence. A warrant. Exactly. And we have also the evidence for him do something. We will never go in like a mission without having a warrant. Because we are a democratic country. So we do work by the law. And if we don't have the evidence, we just aren't going to go there and arrest him. This is how we work. And then we are coming to the, you know, to the house on the terrace. Of course, everything is quiet. We surround the building or the house, depends what it is. And we have like seven to eight people that are in charge of like, you know, breaking in the house and like, you know, watching everything and then eventually arrest the terrorist. I was the guy that bridging the door. So I was, I did like a bridger courses. So I know how to do it like silently without anyone listen and hear. And then when we got home, we don't know exactly which room is going to be. Yeah. But we are doing investigate. And when we come there, we just arrest him. And all of the stuff that I just said, it's maybe, and I'm like exaggerating, 20 minutes, 20, even less. Mm. If we were like 5 minutes inside the house, 10 minutes of like, you know, just arranging everything, see that everything is fine and disappear. So this is basically our daily routine. We're coming in, getting the person, coming out. Nobody knows that we've been there.
Yeah, right. Far out. And how often were these jobs? Were they, is this
every
regular?
Night. Every night.
Every night.
Every night. Literally every night.
What's the area of operations?
The West Bank.
Just so, all in the West Bank.
Almost every village in the West Bank today has Hamas supporters and Hamas infrastructure, and not also Hamas. Let me tell you this, Jihad, ISIS, like I can go over and over. They got so many terrorist groups that are all has the same end goal, and it's to eliminate Israel and eliminate civilians. They don't care about their families. They're going to kill their families on the way because they have a greater cause. This is the fucked up mentality that we have to deal with, you know? You know how many times the husbands that we came to arrest, the terrorists, threw their wife on us so they can escape? They literally threw their wife on us. You know, we woke up, threw the wife on us, and started running from, like, the windows. This is the type of the mentality. Mm. They don't care. They just care about one thing, and it's to kill us, the Jewish people.
So every night you're doing these jobs, and let's just take it back. You're only, 18, 19, maybe 20 years old max, just young.
Yeah.
And most of your team is around the same age?
Same age, except the
commanders,
officer. The
officer
sometimes, like, the commander is like maybe a year or two above you. So this guy is also 22, 23, 24.
How dangerous are most of these jobs? Were you, you know, were there times where it was obviously gunfights?
Highly. Always. We had so many gunfights during the service, you know. They throw at you like little bombs and like really, people call it rocks, but it's literally boulders that they are like throwing at you from the roofs. We had like a couple of times that they threw like laundry machines, and we had also one operation that they threw a donkey, literally a dead donkey from a rooftop. This is the crazy people that we are dealing here. They don't care about animals. They just throw whatever they can in order to, like, you know, to kill you and to hit you. And unfortunately, we had a soldier called Ronen Melibovsky. I hope I'm saying his name right. But he was in an operation and one of them took a boulder and threw on his head from a rooftop of like around 6 floors. And he died on the spot, unfortunately. It happened. And so you have to, when you go to those operations, you know that there is a chance that you're not coming back. And literally, you're doing it every night that you're taking the chance to think about our families, our girlfriends back at home, like our future. You know, we're still kids. We have so many stuff that we want to do and so many goals that we want to achieve and dreams. And you, every night, you're taking a risk that you're not going to complete them. And this is the, like, you know, the reality that we have here in Israel, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot to ask earlier, mate, where are you originally from in Israel?
So it's a city called Hadera. It's kind of like center northwest, beautiful place, amazing beach, amazing people, and, you know, a unite place. They're like all Israel. We do take care of each other, especially in those kind of times that we are in the war. It's a lovely place.
And all your,
I don't know if it's for like tourists, but
yeah. All your family still there?
Yeah. No, my brother is, as I said, in Africa. Yep. My sister she's right now here in Israel.
Yeah.
And I moved to a different city together with my girlfriend. We live together.
Yeah, of course.
In a different place.
So back to when you're obviously in this unit, you're only young. Are you getting time off? Are you getting time off to fly home and see the family, have some time off, and then back into work?
Yeah, so you said fly?
Fly.
So let me correct you and a little bit give you a perspective about what's going on. The West Bank is literally, the West Bank is 5 minutes from Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And 30 minutes or 40 minutes from my home.
Oh,
it's not even fly.
Oh, it's that close. Yeah, I thought you were on the other side of
Israel.
It's
literally that close.
Oh, easy.
And think about it. Everything that I told you about those crazy people are literally 40 minutes from my own place, from my parents' house. This is how close we are to the danger, you know? So it's not a fly. You literally drive there, and some people can even walk to their homes from the area.
What was what was the suburb that your parents live in? I just want to Google it. I'll have a look.
It's called Hadera. And then if you look at Jenin, for example, one of the really craziest city, like a stronghold for terrorists, it's like a 30 to 40 minutes, maybe less driving to get there. Of course, we have the army, you have borders and everything, but it's literally close to the border.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, wow. That's crazy.
This is how close we are to like those animals, you know? And if you look at Gaza, for example, and what happened on the 7th of October, those guys are 1 kilometer away from the danger. You know, this is how close we are to those assholes.
Bloody hell. So you're doing, so you're tied into this unit for the first 3 years full time as a, you know, a full time soldier as part of, national service. As you said, all young boys need to do 3 years and girls do 2 years. Where are you living? Are you living on base? Are you living off base?
Base. You live in the base and let's say you are going home almost every weekend. But you have like your phone really near to your ear, because almost every weekend we got like called back to the army because something happened, like a terror attack or somebody's planning to do a terror attack, and we know that because we got the intelligence. So you're not really having the time off, because eventually when you do like night after night after night, those kind of danger terrorists, you do need to rest at home and you don't really have it. And again, think about that. We are 18 to 21 years old.
Just kids.
We are still young. We do enthusiasts, but eventually our mental health can be damaged really badly without this like relief. And we didn't have this relief, but thanks God we do okay. Except I will not mention names, but I do have some members, close friends of mine that didn't finish up well the army. They still carry on stuff with them, you know, to their civilian lives.
Of course.
If it's like peeing during the night or shouting during the night.
Of course. PTSD.
You know, getting into. Exactly. PTSD is the right word for it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, mates, in regards to, you know, firearms, obviously, you know, we all see that you guys take your firearms home.
Can you say it again?
You take your rifle home?
Yes, of course, you must.
Yeah.
You must, being like in Israel, again, unfortunately, and you see this these days, you got to have weapon with you, because Every day we have something going on, you know, and you have to, even as civilians, not even as a soldier, you have to be like, you have to react. And we got so many terror attacks that stopped by in it, like civilians that carry weapon with them, because this is the reality that we live in. You got to carry something with you, because those guys can come from everywhere. It can come from like being an Israeli, Palestinian, or Israeli Arabic person that can come and like, oh, my family member lives in Jenin and I don't know, the army arrested him. So now because I am like an Israeli civilian, I will come and do a terror attack. You know, this is the stuff that's happening here. Unfortunately, I'm not going to say you cannot trust anyone, but you do have to put in mind eventually that they can flip on you and you cannot really know. I have a lot of Arab friends. I love them the most and I really trust them, but there are Arabs that live with us together that anytime can like wake up in the morning, say, okay, I don't want to kill someone. And they will come and stab someone or explode someone or shoot someone.
Now, during this time, obviously 2014, the Gaza war happened. They fired a whole bunch of 700 rockets ish.
I don't remember the exact number. It was a consequence to everything. So it didn't start at protective edge war. It started before with the three kids that got kidnapped. I don't know if you know the story. So three kids get kidnapped by terrorists. They've been held there for a month. Eventually, they wishing to rest in peace, but all three of them slaughtered by the terrorists. And a special fact about the last operation, after we slept in a gym, literally in a gym for a month, working three times at night. So think about it, that we're arresting three terrorists every night for a month without like going home. Literally months of sleeping in like a gym, in like, not like on a bed, on the floor and stuff like that, because they need us to be close to the area. And eventually after a month, we kind of like came to a closure and we found the terrorists and it was my team and the SWAT team that eliminated the terrorists. So I've been part of the last mission of killing those terrorists. And fortunately, you know, we found out that the kids are dead. And that's what led to 2014 war. Because eventually when this happened, the guys in Gaza started to shoot the rockets, you know, because we eliminate those terrorists, and then the war began. And I was part of Protective Edge. We got inside Gaza. And I remember we woke up around like, I don't know, it was 4 a.m. that commander woke us up like, guys, listen, let's roll it up. Prepare everything you can, the gear, we are going to Gaza. And it was a moment that we were like, what? Like, what, Gaza? What is it connected to us? We are in the West Bank. That's what we do. That's what you're practicing to do. Like, Gaza, it's literally a different world from what we're doing. So we geared up everything. We, like, as I said, we woke up at 4 a.m. We trained all day long in the south in like a training base. And then around 3 a.m. at night, without sleeping, everything without sleeping, we got into Gaza. And we were so, so tired. And a minute before we got into one, like my, so we kind of like separated to two groups, like two, not separated, but we gathered together like to twos, like to pairs.
Yeah.
And my pair, like my teammate, literally from the stress, fell down and started like shaking.
Convulsing.
Kind of like in
like a seizure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like a seizure. So he had a seizure and he was like really stressed out. So he didn't came up together. So then I grouped together with another guy. But because it was weird, you know, and this guy trained and everything. And then we came to the Gaza. That was like a really something new for us. And you see again the impact of putting so much pressure on a 20 years old guy or 19 years old guy. But again, we don't have a choice because it's an existence war. You know, it's either us or them. That's what you're like, what you're saying to yourself.
That's crazy, mate. That's crazy. So you do, you know, this, that's, that war lasts for about 50 days or something, didn't it?
No, more.
Was it more?
It was more. We've been inside of there for around 14, 10 days. Just a second. Girlfriend issues again. Okay, just gave it a key. So we've been there for like 10 days in a row, I think.
Yeah.
Was really high tense, you know, because Gaza, first of all, it was August or July or August. I think it was August. So it's really, really hot, really hot. And you carry a bag with 90% of your weight, 90% weight. How do you call it? Weight, body weight.
Yeah.
On your back. And I was also a sniper. So I got my rifle over there, my rifle on me, my pistol on the side. You got to have like, you know, food,
water,
sleeping, everything.
Yeah, everything.
Because you don't know exactly what's going on, where you're going, for how long. You know, you don't know when the supply is going to come. And we had a mistake on the first day because it was too hot and we didn't sleep that we almost finished all of our water. So we came to a point that we are like really, really like thirsty and we didn't have water and it was so humid as well. And that was like, you know, you walk in Gaza and you got to understand where we walked, it was like a sand that it's almost in the, like in your, the height of your knee. So you're like standing and walking really hardly and the weight is on you. This was like exhausting. And I remember when we got there, it was night and it was like a huge fog. You couldn't see, like I couldn't see you, for example. I mean, we are like what, 30 centimeters away from each other, like in camera wise. I couldn't see 30 centimeters like in front of me. That's how foggy it was. And then it went the morning when like the fog like just spread away. I saw literally a building in front of me. I couldn't see anything, but then boom, building in front of my eyes. And the intelligence said that there are terrorists over there. So you got like wake up and start like being really focused on what's going on. And then how the days go, you know, you're fighting, you're conquering areas, you're cleaning areas from terrorists and you base yourself at night and you keep going to the next day and doing like special operations. And I remember I had like three, let's say, points in the war, and this one, protective edges, I can't forget. One was the first night when the dogs of our unit just start fighting each other, and I was in the middle of the night, and it's like jumping on me. And I was like, oh shit, there is terrorists inside the building. Like everybody woke up and was like, what's going on? Why the dogs are like fighting? They just had an argument. I don't know about what, maybe the bones of the eating. I don't know what they're arguing about. And the second thing it was when, so a team of the, that didn't finish their training yet came together with us and they didn't have snipers. So they took me and another friend of mine to their top floor. And we literally did like an hour shift, hour sleep, hour shift, hour sleep until the morning. And then when the hour sleep came to, like, it was mine, after 10 minutes, somebody's like kicking my leg. And I was so pissed off. Like literally I have 50 minutes to sleep. Like what's going on? What do you need from me? And then it was a really high level commander, really high level, somebody even above my unit commander, really high rank. And I didn't know it. It was the middle of the night and he's calling me to the stairs and he started asking questions. And I'm like, I'm answering him because I'm not in focus. I'm like sleepy. And he's like, what are you doing here? What's your name? Blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, wait, but who are you? And then he said the name and his rank. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, oh, okay. Pleasure to meet you. Thanks. And then he handed me over a phone. It was like, call your parents, tell them you're fine. Because we have our phone here with us. It was like 2 a.m. I'm calling to my parents and my father was like, you know, my father and my mother was like, my father woke up and got, hello? And then my mother was like, who is this? She was, you know, in stress because she thought something happened. And I was like, Dad, it's Shemtov. He was like, wait, you're out? You are out of Gaza? No, I'm in. I got a phone. I tell everybody that we are okay. Tell all the parents that we are fine. Everything is fine. Like, I love you guys. I mean, and when I woke up in the morning, I had like a huge smile on my face. And my team was like, what the fuck are you smiling? Like, we're in fucking war. Like, guys, you don't know what happened yesterday. You literally don't know what happened to me yesterday. And then I told them and everybody was like, wow.
That's cool.
So this is two of them. And another, like the third one, this is like a kind of a fucked up situation. We got into a kind of like an hospital that was all cleared up. Everything was on the floor. There'd been like, I don't know, blood, weapons, stuff like that. And after the war, we got called by the army police that said that the Palestinians claimed that we killed the people that was in there, but nobody was there. When we got there, everything was like empty, but just like weapons on the floor and blood on the floor. And we can't, like, they literally investigate us for maybe doing it, but we had GoPro cameras on us, so everything was like, you know, documented, thanks God. But this is just show you how democratic country we are, that we do investigate even those kind of allegations against our own soldiers.
Yeah, by the terrorists.
By terrorists.
Yeah. Same as Australia, mate. We're going through the war crime stuff right now, all because of what terrorists say. You do that operation. You finish up there. Your 3 years is up. What do you do? Can you have the opportunity to stay on, or can you? Obviously, you got out.
So, if you're going into a special team inside a special, like in Duvdevan, then you are signing for longer. If you're an officer, signing for longer, but you don't have the option to sign up for longer. You're basically released. And then you're starting your reserve duty. And reserve duty, that means that every year you're stopping your life for 1 month to train, to do like, I don't know, like missions for like a month. You're going to protect the community, or you're doing something basically for every year until age 42.
Yeah, gotcha.
This is what reserve duty is about.
Yep. So you have to go back to reserves and you have to give 1 year, one month of your, of your life training back with your unit. Yes. Same unit. You're still working with the same unit. Yep.
We're with the same team, but because the unit has a capacity of like people that it can handle and like, you know, let them be in the unit. So we do send out to a different unit. We do almost the same stuff that we did, but with an extra stuff that we not used to do, but that's okay. Like, you learn.
Yeah, right. So what year is this? We talking 2000, 15?
2015 I released. Yeah. I flew for like 2.5 years, just traveled around the world, living in Vegas.
Oh, did you?
Went to South Africa, South America, been in the Philippines, Thailand, all Europe, just like, you know, cleaning up the mind.
Yeah.
Kind of like having like a brief, you know, and like enjoy the life. And then I started my degree in age 24. I did my bachelor degree in nursing. So I'm a certified nurse. These days I'm not doing it, but we're going to get to the, like during my work in the hospital, I worked in the ER and different other places. And when we get to the 7th of October, I'm going to tell you about the craziness of being a nurse in the ER and the combination of being part of the people that, you know, fight. Like I was one of the fighters in 7th of October against those terrorists. But when we come to this, I will
speak of course, man, about of course.
What exactly happened.
So over the next, next few years, you're just traveling, you're just working normally, having a normal life, somewhat normal life.
Yeah, some normal life. Depends how you when you live. But for us, it's normal life. For people, other people are gonna say it's madness.
I think it's the way it should be. But so from there, because mate, for Australia, just quickly for Australia, you do your time in the military. You don't have to go back. You don't have to do reserves. You can get out, and that's it. You can just hang up your boots and never train again. Which is it's pretty stupid. You know, we should.
I wish we could have this privilege.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah.
We don't.
I think every military should have a national service where you have to serve. And I'm sure that there's been studies done to say that it's benefited young men like yourself. You know, because who knows what direction would a lot of young men go. You see it here in Australia. A lot of young men get into crime, or they get into drugs. They get into this. They get into that. Whereas you guys are focused straight into the war fighting and, you know, helping out your country.
Yep. It's something that you're not controlling. You know, it's kind of like you're getting into the army in age 18 and you're doing all those crazy stuff that I just mentioned, and you have dilemmas and you have like a really hard decisions, like on the spot, you know, if to do
life
this and that, how to react and et cetera. And you're getting to age 21 with the mentality of 40 years old guy from abroad, you know, from the state, for example, or whatever. You're coming with perspective about life, with maturity, with kind of like, I'm not going to say that you know exactly what you want to do in life, but you do have a mindset of like, I'm not going to give up. If something hard is going to happen, I know how to handle it. Like, I do want to get into a like serious relationship because I know how to handle it right now. Not back in the days when I was 18 and all of the stuff that was in my mind is who is going to be the nurse girl that I'm going to hook up, or which party I'm going to go and stuff like that. But you're coming to like a really 180 change of your mentality and also physically, because I can say that from the workout in the army, I became the big guy that I am right now. Like I'm 6'4 and it's like 196 centimeters. And I'm like, I don't know, a really big guy to
same as
in
me.
A way.
Yeah.
I'm like 110 kilos right now. So, you know, this
is. Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Now, mates, what happens if you were to say no to reserve, or even say no to national service? What happens if you go to prison?
So basically, back in the days when I was recruited, if you say no, you're going to the prison. But these days, the government, because of all this, you know, youngsters that are like, you
pussies.
Know what I mean? I
They're
think,
pussies.
You know, you,
They're
exactly,
pussies.
Those pussies that say, no, I don't want to serve in the army. I have better things to do. All those kind of assholes. I'm not going to conclude everyone because there are a lot of great people, like great young, like the Z generation that are amazing and they do want to contribute and like, you know, and be part of the national effort. But there are those assholes, those like, we call them like cheese kids. You know, they're like kind of like mushy. And those guys are the ones that they're like, you know, don't want to join the army. And then eventually the army said, okay, you don't want to be here? Don't be here. Go do whatever. And sometimes it's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fair because there you got the great people that are coming and they're doing it like because it's mandatory. And then you got those mushy kids that are like, no, army is not for me. I don't like guns. Oh, shut the fuck up. Like, everybody do it. Like, grow a pair of balls and go to the army and like, stop bullshitting everybody because we need everyone here. Literally, yeah. We need everyone.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, mate, another quick question. As you said, you're catching, you know, up to 3, 4, 5 terrorists a night. What's happening with these people? Are they getting put to trial? Are they?
They're getting put to trial.
Jail. Put down.
So if they're not taking us like literally on the spot trying to shoot us, we will never kill them on the spot. We don't have emissions of like killing and disappear. Of course, we have our private intelligent units that are doing some really hard missions. Everybody, it's kind of like the CIA for the state. You know, you got like the KGB. Every country has this special, let's say, governmental, institute that does stuff. But we don't do those kind of stuff. We do coming to arrest them and bring them in front of a judge. Because, again, we are democratic. But I don't know. I don't know. They like look at the 7th of October. Did they brought us in front of a judge? No. But we do try to separate ourselves from them and not to like going with the same mindset of animals like they have. And so for us, we are arresting them. Again, if they're trying to shoot us, we have to react and eliminate them. It's not an option to bring them down, not bring them down if they're attacking us with guns and other stuff. And then we bring them in front of the judge and they're coming to a trial. And they have like, you know, they're getting like a regular prisoner's life. You know, if it's like 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, depends how badly the action that they did, you know, how badly it was. And that's basically how it works. We do work as a democratic country. In my opinion, sometimes you don't have to work with like the democratic facts because those animals did so much pretty fucked up stuff that, in my opinion, sometimes we don't need to show mercy. But this is my opinion. Sometimes those animals, you know, for example, the guys that like shoot and murder those parents in front of their kids' eyes, in my opinion, those guys doesn't need to see light anymore.
No.
In my opinion.
That's the correct opinion. It's funny. I just had a Delta Force operator on the other day. His podcast dropping soon. He was telling me a story in Iraq where rather than shooting this terrorist in the head, he shot him in the gut so he could suffer. It was good. It was good.
This is for him. It's great. For him, it's great. I don't know, maybe it's my nursing part of like the emotions, but let's say I'm not going to shoot someone so he can suffer. It's either like eliminate him or either arrest him. But this is the type of mindset that they taught us, you know, in the unit. Judge every action that you're doing. Because think about that. If it was you, for example, and your parents was the one that see their kids getting kidnapped, like, you know, getting arrested and or kidnapped during the night because he did something bad, it can still impact them. It's still the impact, like his young brothers or sister that watch something happen. They don't understand the context. They just say the army taking his brother or her sisters or whatever, you know? So we do really work with our brain, even when we are in a really stressful situation.
Yeah, right. Mates, obviously.
But I don't judge him. I don't judge him for it.
Nah. I think it's great. They should all suffer. Honestly, moving forward, October 7, 2023. Now, a pretty defining point in world's history, not to mention, you know, the videos that come out. You know, I saw a lot of the stuff on Telegram, the uncensored stuff, and it was barbaric. It was disgusting. You know, run me through this, you know, because obviously Israel's was, I wouldn't say expecting it, but it was never discounted. What happened? Like how did this happen to start off with? And then let's run through, obviously, the response, you know, for you. Being a reservist, getting the call up.
So basically, in my opinion, what happened that we become a little bit arrogant and they caught us with our pants down because a lot of like people, and we did saw soldiers saying that they warned their commanders about something that is going on inside Gaza, some preparations. But again, we've been arrogant and we really didn't think that they can come up with this idea and they can really execute this plan. Because we kind of like, we look at them as like, they're not going to do it, you know. They're not going to do it. Maybe they're going to try to shoot or whatever, but they cannot come with this kind of like plan. And this is where they caught us with our pants down. And our arrogancy brought us to the place of 7th of October, unfortunately. We could have handled it differently if we haven't been that arrogant. And if the commanders do listen to the soldiers, in my opinion, of course, I'm not like in a government official. I'm just like speaking on behalf of myself. And like, for example, the night before, because it was like the most, let's say, holy day for us. It's when we got the Torah from God and, you know, our Bible and everything. And it was also Saturday, so it's less soldiers in the base. It was holiday, so it's even less soldiers in the base. And they knew it. They knew it. And we didn't. So we took a battalion out of the Gaza Strip and put it in the West Bank. Because as I said, it's 30 minutes away from places and sometimes even 5 minutes away from Israeli community. And we thought, the government thought, that the most likely something will happen in the West Bank because they are really close to each other. But they didn't even think about a scenario, you know, thought about a scenario that something can happen from Gaza. And that's what happened. They caught us on guard with like a really few soldiers out there that can like do something. And that's what basically happened on October the 7th. They infiltrated. And you know what happened? You know, we trust those people that we give them like work permissions. And they had work permissions to come from Gaza. And also it's happened from the West Bank as well. Those Palestinians got work permission from us so they can provide food, everything their family needs. What country does that for their enemies? No, give those work permissions to others. And we did. And this is came and eventually in against us, because those people that had the work permissions literally drew maps and gave intelligence to Hamas about every location that is important, about people that are important, locations of, for example, you know, every, let's say it's called kibbutz. It's kind of like a community. It's small city, I would call it. And every small city or every kibbutz has this like a threshold of like weapons just in case something will happen in the border. And they gave the locations of those stations to Hamas. And when Hamas infiltrated those kibbutzes, the guys that knows that when a day come and something like this happened, they know that where they have to go and what happened, everybody has his own mission. And when they came to get the weapons, Hamas already waited for them then and like did an ambush. Cause the guys that work in the kibbutz supply this intelligence. And those are the guys that get the work permission from us so they can provide their families. And what we got back from it, you know what we call it? Like this. Mm. That's what we got from it. You know, eventually. Sorry for being a rude, but this is exactly what happened.
Wow. So, you know, that happens. How long after, you know, the invasion does it start reverberating around, obviously, you being a reservist and the media? Because the media, it grabbed onto the media quite quickly. So what were you?
It was terroristic.
What were you doing? Like, what were you doing that day? Obviously, it's one of those days that I'm sure you remember exactly what you were doing.
Yeah. So basically, it started the night before. You know, we went to a movie. You know, this is how crazy from 0 to 100 stuff happened. It's 0 to 200 even. Because we've been in a movie. Me, my girlfriend, and my family, we went to a movie. Was fine. We went to sleep around 12 to 1 a.m., something like this. And during this time, also, there's been a crazy trance party that called the Nova. I guess you probably heard about it. The Nova Festival. It was during this time that it happened. And I have friends from there. We're going to speak about it later on. Some of them survived. Some of them, unfortunately, got murdered. But I went to sleep and I'm waking up from an alarm sounds at 6:30 a.m. I didn't know what I'm hearing. Like, what is this noise that I'm hearing right now? What do I listen to? So I woke up my girlfriend. I was like, Adele, listen, like, what is this? It's an ambulance? And she like opened up her phone and she was like, literally, Shemto, we are under attack. Like, we're literally under a rocket barrage attack. And she unfortunately has kind of like a panic disorder since 2014 because of protective edge war and the rocket launches that happened. So two things running in my mind at when it happened. First of all, I need to take care of her and like, you know, protect her as much as I can and kind of like, you know, absorb her panic and try to like calm her down. And the second thing is, okay, I'm going to get a call any moment to come back to the unit because this wasn't a regular, it wasn't a regular rocket barrage. This was something else. You understood that something was different. Because we kind of got used to those rocket barrages every once and then, like almost every week we have something like this. It's not big deal for us. And as I thought, I got the call. So I picked up some of the stuff. I dropped her at her parents' house and I drove to the base. Meanwhile, when I'm driving, I'm starting to get those videos in Telegram, as you said, of like terrorists inside Israel. And I'm like, no fucking way. This is probably an AI or something from better day. Then I seen like an Israeli police car driving like next to this terrorist. I was like, okay, we are in a different situation. And we're starting getting those rumors about terrorists inside one of our cities called Sderot, running around and shooting people and like shooting a police station and this and that. And then we started to hear about the Nova Festival and all of it coming like from Telegram, videos and people like blood everywhere and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, something is going on. Like, we are in a war. We are literally in a war. And then it was so surrealistic because like literally people calling from their phones to the news, you know, like think about a reporter that is talking to the camera and speaking to people that telling, listen, please bring the police. We got terrorists inside our house. This is like the calls that like a reporter in the news getting like live and like people asking, where is the army? Where is everybody? You know, because we've been like surprised. We haven't been like really ready for that kind of scenario. And you saw many people and many units just grab guns and like drove to the south to start fighting. And then the army started like, you know, reorganize itself and like start sending troops and everybody to the south to like handle the situation. And I was driving to the base this moment because I didn't know the entire picture. When I got to the base, we started to realize some stuff, you know, realize what's going on, really what's going on. And we came to a really hard decision. If we are taking our guns and our equipment and just driving to the south and with God's will, we're going to come out alive, but maybe we can help with some stuff. Or we should listen to our commanders, stay with the unit and the team and go to the West Bank. Eventually, we decided to listen to our commanders because we thought that they had the bigger picture that we don't have because we are a simple like soldier and they might know stuff that we don't know. And there is a reason why we need to go to the West Bank. And eventually they are right because the stuff that are happening in Gaza is impacting the air, like the area in the West Bank. Why? Because it's getting warmer. You know, people are like starting like, you know, to kind of like rising up, all those terrorist groups rising up and they can do everything like in a matter of seconds and minutes. And we didn't want to get caught, not guard. So we had to go there and protect the civilians' life, like right now. So we did drive to the West Bank, and since then, we did many, many special operations. We had to eliminate a lot of terrorists. Unfortunately, we had like a lot of terrorists that, you know, manipulated a terror attack and eventually ran away, and then we caught them during the night or the day after, and it was like for 4 months. It was hard because we didn't came home for a while. With being like with all the team again, you know, it's nice because you see the team again and your old friends and your buddies and you're catching up because, you know, during the day, you don't really have time to see them and catching up with them. So it's nice to see them, but not in this circumstances, you know, not under these circumstances. So this is basically what happened since the 7th of October. You know, we had the Nova Festival, and this is in the memory of Ben Uri, one of our good friends. Ben Uri was a PTSD soldier since Protective Edge. Amazing guy. I love him, like, really amazing, like pure guy, pure heart. And he was in the Nova Festival. This was his way to deal with his PTSD through music. And unfortunately, he got slaughtered while he was hiding in like a sewer pump. And he did yoga to handle the stress. And they found his phone on the ground, and the tourists eliminated him. They also slaughtered another friend from the unit that was not in the same team as I. And another crazy story was a guy that is a cousin of a good friend of mine. I think it was Rudy Skaryshevsky, and he was a father of amazing three kids. His two daughters was in Beersheba. This is south from Gaza. And his son was an officer in the army. And when the rocket bar started, his daughter called him like, listen, dad, like, she was scared. And he drove. He didn't know that the terrorists are out there, you know, waiting for Israelis to drag those roads. And he drove to pick her up because she was afraid. And he got stopped by a Hamas checkpoint. They dressed up like IDF and they murder him. And they try to call him. They didn't get an answer. And then his son located the GPS of the car. And when he got there, he saw his father, like, literally, you know, slaughtered. This is how fucked up the situation was. And, you know, people telling that we are not reacting proportionally. But how can you react proportionally to these kind of actions, to raping women, to cut down their breasts, to rape men's also as well, to cut their heads off, to like kidnap babies? You know that like people are saying that there is no evidence for those kind of stuff, and even the baby that was in the oven. Who the fuck gonna publish evidence of this kind of stuff out there? You know, first of all, you have to respect the people that it happened to them. Second of all, we are not animals, and it doesn't matter where you're going to get, like, you know, bring us to a point that we have to show it. We're not going to show it because we have to respect. And other than that, you don't want to see stuff like that. It's going to call, like, cause if this stuff going to run, like, you know, that it runs stuff of that, some of that run on Telegram. But think about the generations and the kids and everybody that served. It can cause a lot of harm to people mentally, you know, see those kind of stuff. Because this is a fucked up situation. This is stuff that even the brightest producer in the horror movies world will never think about, this kind of like stuff. You know what I mean? And people in the world judging us for not acting proportionally. How can you act proportionally to this? What, we're going to rape the same number of women that they rape? We are going to cut the same number of breasts that they cut? We're going to head off people at the same number that, like, you cannot do those kind of stuff. You know what I mean? You got to handle the source.
The people you talk about that are judging you, they are the dickheads that have never experienced any trauma, never experienced any nothing. You know what I mean? They are the ones, they are the pussies that don't want to join the Israeli Defense Force. They are those people that are saying that it's overproportionate. It is not. These people, every single one of those Hamas operators, or terrorists, I should say, should be slaughtered. They should be killed. Simple.
I agree.
Simple. They come.
I agree.
If, you know, I swear to God, if, yeah, far out, they should
be killed. I agree, but the problem is that people literally supporting them because they are crazy. Ignorant.
They
are ignorant. They don't know what's going on here.
We've had these Palestinian, pro-Palestinian, what do you call them, marches here in Australia, which, you know, I'm all for civilians not getting killed. You know, civilians, you
100%.
And, you know, that's one thing that a lot of people think, that Israel's just going in and just killing everyone. No, they're not. They're targeting.
100% not.
They're targeting every single terrorist that's part of this atrocities. So, mate, I get it, and I'm sure 99% of my listeners get it. There's probably one that'll unfollow now, but I don't give a fuck, so stop listening.
that doesn't matter. Well, that's okay. And eventually you got to understand, none of us want this war.
Exactly.
None of the Israeli you're going to ask wants this war. We want to continue with our life. Peacefully. I just told you the night before, we went to a movie with my parents. The day after, we're supposed to have like breakfast with friends. Nobody wants it. Mm. And they're going to say occupation, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, you have to stop bitching out and whining out about everything. You got your opportunity so many times. And even in 2005, when we drew back from Gaza, we took a lot of Israelis physically out of Gaza so you can have your own country. What happened? You choose democratically to have a fucking terrorist government that's going to control you and going to be like, you know, a threat for us. So what do you expect to happen? Start bitching out. Like they all say, 75 years of,
oppression.
Occupation, blah, yeah. blah, blah, blah. Oppression. First of all, it's not 75 years, you know, because until 67, Jordan was controlling the West Bank and Egypt was controlling Gaza. First of all. Second of all, look at the Indians. Look at the Pakistan. Look at every little colonial, even us. We know we got fucking 6 million people got slaughtered in the Holocaust. My family was there. You know, I have like, I'm a descendant of like Holocaust survivors. And eventually we grew up, we gather the people, we grow some balls and we start bitching out about it. And we literally started our own country. And look where Israel is now. We're prospecting high tech, military wise, healthcare wise, everything. But those guys has the mentality of the underdog. And that's why they're going to keep being like in this kind of situation and bitching out every day to the world. And even the money that the world sent is not going to them. It's going to the fucking leader that are living in Qatar and having their best life. And who is responsible for that? Israel. Because it's easy. It's just people love to adopt the underdog mentality and sided by the underdog mentality. But it depends the situation, because you could have also been with the German Nazi Germany when Brit, like the English people and the Americans and the Russian attacked them. You could have sided by them, but this is the right situation? Of course not. And the good situation, for example, if I'm comparing Russia and Ukraine, so of course Ukraine, you're gonna side with Ukraine because they got attacked by Russia. That's 100% true. But it's not the same because people love to compare this war to the Palestinian-Israel war. This is not the same.
No.
There is a moral distinction between, you know, we attacking them and we are targeting terrorists and trying not to arm civilians and them targeting from the first place civilians. There is a moral distinction and eventually we're in a war. A war is a bad thing. Nobody want to be in a war. We are forced to be unfortunate because we have to protect ourselves. It's an existing war. You know, if they had the option, they would slaughter all of us without even blink. You know what I mean? They don't even have the conscience about it. And there is also, unfortunately, side effects. There is also casualties. We don't want it, but we are in a war. Wake up. This is war. You've never been part of it. But trust me and you know what is war. There is casualties. Unfortunately, nobody wants them to die, but what happened? Like, we have to protect ourselves. It's literally a self-defense. And people need to understand it. But again, the underdog mentality.
It's still all too true, mate. All too true. Now, back to, you know, your time, 4 months. So you did 4 months on rotation. Again, mate, what are you doing? Are you doing job after job type thing? Just the same stuff, night after night.
Same stuff, night after night. During the days, we're protecting the roads in the Judea Samaria or the West Bank. Because eventually, I don't know if people and you know what is the, let's say, the terms and conditions in the West Bank. So the West Bank is separated into three areas. You got Area A, Area B, and Area C. Area C is for the Israelis. Israelis lives in the Area C. It's only Israelis. Area B is mixed. It's also Palestinians and also Israelis. They walk together. They live together. They got the same, like everything is together. And you got Area A. Area A, it's only Palestinians. You know what is the difference between Area A and Area C? I will tell you this. If a Palestinian will get inside an Area C, the Jewish people are going to tell him, listen, you're just wrong about the the place, you can go. And if you need to, for example, go to Ramallah, turn left and right over there and you're going to get there. If an Israeli will go inside area A, he's not going to come alive out there, out of there. He's not going to come because there is literally signs, red huge signs that said Israelis are not allowed. Caution, like you can, like, for example, I don't know the exact word, but eventually they're saying to you that you might be killed if you're going to get there, eventually. And this is the type of stuff. And eventually most of the terror attack happening in area B, because they are using the fact that they do live together and walk together. For example, there is a supermarket called Rami Levi that Israelis and I, like Palestinian Israelis, walk there together. You know how many times a Palestinian worker woke up in the morning and said, okay, I have an opportunity. And they did like terror attack in those supermarkets as workers, literally stabbing their own colleagues with knives and guns and everything. So this is about the West Bank. This is the like separation in the West Bank, separation. They all eventually live in together. The roads are area B, so you can drive the roads together. And on those roads, again, they're using the fact that Israel is driving them as well. And they are taking those boulders that people call pebbles, and they are blaming Israel for arresting kids for throwing pebbles. But eventually you get to see it's fucking boulders. And think about it, the bus driving 120 kilometers per hour. And when you, a little kid, throw this boulder up in the air while this bus driver with 50 people in it drive into this, what's going to happen? It's going to flip up and people are going to die. So it is a terrorist, the same as a person with a gun in his hand. It's a weapon, but people doesn't understand it. And you want us to hear something, it's not funny, but something crazy. While I've been there, I think it was the most crazy thing like that happened. And like, you know, it's kind of like, let's say that's why I think that they are so dumb. So there are like two type of license plates. You got the yellow one and the white one. The white one is Palestinian. The yellow one means Israeli. But Israeli can be Arabs and can be also Israel, like, you know, Jewish and Christians and whatever. And what happened? A terrorist, three terrorists waited in some crossroad and a yellow plated car came and they start shooting in it. You know what apparently happened? Like what was happened? They were shooting on an Israeli Arab that came to visit his family in Ramallah, and they eliminated him and his wife because they saw the yellow plate and they thought it was a Jewish. And you know what's crazy? You wanna guess what was the occupation of those three terrorists?
No.
What? Two doctors and one nurse.
Fucking
hell. Two doctors and one nurse in Ramallah that committed this terror attack.
Wow.
This is the type of people that we are dealing with.
It's just, it's absolute madness. Like it's far out, mate. So 4 months, you're on the job. How long ago are we talking? Like when did you leave?
A month ago. A month ago, yeah.
And what's the talk? So you get your time off. Is there talks of you got to go back a little bit sooner than later?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to – so we also have the front in the north, which is Hezbollah. So it's really escalating right now. And again, we still have 134 hostages. I hope I'm saying the right number. 134 hostages in Gaza, in my opinion. And it's really make me sad. I think that a lot of them are not with us anymore. We still have Kfir Bibas, the one-year-old baby, you know, that got kidnapped there when he was like, what, 8 years old or 7 years old, month, a baby that is still out there in captivity since the 7th of October. And so we are probably going to get back. They told us around October, November for 40 days just to complete another round. But it might going to come closer to July and August, because usually in July and August, it's kind of like a war holiday. You know, this is when usually the war is happening.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And fuck, it's a lot to take in, mate. Like it's absolutely,
you know,
it's barbaric what they did. Now,
I know.
So you'll go back to the unit And, you know, you've got, as you said, Hezbollah up north starting to play up a bit more now. So this could become a very complex environment shortly. Where do you see it going over the next, you know, are the IDF taking good ground in Gaza and eliminating Hamas?
So I tell you what, right now we have so much pressure from our allies and a lot of countries from the world to not getting into Rafah, you know, and eventually there is four more battalions that are in Rafah of Hamas. So there is no other option other than putting a military pressure on those people to surrender. Because, you know, if Hamas going to lay down the weapons and going to surrender, the war ends today. Literally now it's 10-24. 10-24 is going to end. But it's not going to happen because they do want us to get armed as much as we can. And they kind of like holding us, you know, in the sensitive area with our hostages and with all the press pressure, but also the press, literally the photographers and everybody that are literally taking a side with them and not with us, you know, and they use it in their favor. And eventually we saw that literally a couple of weeks ago, that two hostages have been rescued from Rafah. So how the fuck you don't want us to get into Rafah to save more hostages and to eliminate Hamas? No, you're going to kill more Palestinians. They are all, you guys put them in Rafah. Where are they going to go? Listen, guys, first of all, we did take care of them and we did save them from being slaughtered by Hamas or by, you know, being a casualty from a war. We do have a plan to take them to a different place, but people are really into, no, don't go into Rafah. And now Brigham said that if we're not going to stop, if we're going into Rafah or stop the war, I don't remember what exactly from those facts, they're going to stop shipping weapons to Israel. And then I'm starting to realize that these people really don't know what's going on here. They fucking believe the Hamas propagandas and all those fuckers out there and that shouting stuff that they don't even know. You know, from the river to the sea. You ask them what river and what sea, they don't even know the answer. They're like, I don't know. Somebody told me to shout it.
Isn't you say that too? You know, obviously Hamas. You know, the casualty rate for Palestinians, the numbers are given by Hamas.
Exactly. How can you believe a terror attack that supply a number if your policy, you know, every country in the world policy is not to negotiate with terrorists. Eventually, you listen to their numbers. Come on, like,
the media.
Where the fuck is
the
your
media?
Media, just media, lefty media, that, like, you know, just taking a side with the poor guys. And don't get me wrong, I do feel sorry for the Palestinians, the innocent Palestinians that are out there and, you know, have to be part of it because their government is like a terror regime and terrorists, like, literally. And, you know, again, Gaza could have been the next Abu Dhabi. Could have been the next Singapore, but all the money went to their private pockets, you know, and to their tunnels. Instead of building tunnels to protecting the communities and the civilians, they build the tunnels to fight. Like, come on.
I did see videos of the IDF filling these tunnels with water.
You got to do what you got to do. So, you know, eventually there are so many stuff that I'm not even aware, you know, that happened. Because Gaza, it's not my area, but...
I think it's good. I mean, there's no complaints here.
It really depends because eventually, like, you have to clear out those tunnels intelligently or also physically so there won't be any chance for hostages to be held there, you know? And that's what we're doing. That before we are, like, you know, let's say flushing down the toilet. And other stuff that we got to do, you know, to eliminate those terrorists.
Yeah.
And those terrorist infrastructure.
Exactly. So as I said before, mate, you know, where do you see it? Obviously, Hamas are not going to put their hands up and put their guns down and surrender. Where do you see this going over the next, is this going to be an extended thing? Is this going to be 1, 2, 3, 4 years? Is this going to keep going until it happens?
No, I don't think it's going to be years. I think it's a matter of months until Hamas is going to be eliminated 100%. But again, it's hard to eliminate an idea.
It is, exactly right.
There are a lot of, like, it's really hard. And, you know, our goal eventually is to do eliminate Hamas as infrastructure, as terrorists, but also as an idea and as an ideology. And right now, you know, people telling us, eventually, let's say, for example, hypothetically, we do eliminate Hamas. Okay. We got back our hostages with God's will. What now? People asking it. It's really hard to answer it because we don't know for how long it's going to take to get Hamas out, because there is a lot of pressure from the world to not get into Rafah. And eventually we do have allies, and we are a democratic country. So it's taking time, but eventually it's a must. And also, let's, for example, say that we conquer back Gaza. We're now giving the PLO to ruin the area. You know what happened? First of all, before Hamas got in, elected, they literally threw from a roof their opponents from the PLO.
Yeah.
And they murdered their families and everything. So this is first. Second of all, there have been a poll inside the West Bank that said that if, for example, and you know, they tell us to give them their countries and independence, but this poll said that if there had been election right now in the West Bank, 85% of the population going to vote for Hamas. How can you give a country to 85% if 85% of the population is going to literally telling you that we're going to repeat the 7th of October over and over and over again? Where the fuck is your brain? Like, seriously, how can you give a country to those guys? You cannot. You just can't. And we do have communication ways, and we do have some, how do you call it? I don't know, a collaboration with the PLO about some stuff. And we do deliver the money. And eventually those guys also paying the terrorists family after they committed a terror attack. I don't know if you know that. They literally paying them salaries. And those are the guys that we're supposed to give the country to. You know what's going to happen? Listen to this. What happened the day after Hamas elected in 2006? We had a rocket barrage on our heads.
Yeah.
Day after they got elected. What's going to happen if we're going to give them a country right away without doing it smartly and without, like, you know, getting those improvements and those, contracts or whatever of them saying, listen, we guys going to behave. We're going to control everything. We're going to change everything. We're going to build with blah, 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 blah. And if we are not standing in our words and we're going to attack you guys or whatever, we're going to be eliminated and everything is fine. But until we're not going to get those kind of promises and also whatever contracts, then the UN is supposed to be involved in the US, in my opinion, of course, it's only my opinion. We cannot have this. And also their ideology is going to be changed. Because eventually right now they do want to kill us in every second that they get, in every opportunity. Until we don't have this stuff figured, we cannot give them a land. We cannot give them their independence. Because 7th of October is going to repeatedly over and over again.
Yeah, right. So you're saying basically that the IDF will pretty much occupy Gaza until, you know, similar to Iraq.
You see me, right?
No, just cut out. That's okay. I can still hear you. Yep. Oh,
just a second. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, gotcha. So as I said, mate, so similar to somewhat of Iraq, where the US have established a occupation in Iraq and have stayed and helped rebuild somewhat of the infrastructure and build a better government, if you know what I mean. Do you think that's what's going to happen?
I think it's different because the U.S. is way, way,
of,
way
of course, far of course. From Iraq. Yeah.
Here, you know, as I said, it's literally a kilometer away.
Next
even
door.
Less.
Yeah.
So I think it's even more than just building the rebuild, the infrastructure and everything. It's a way to go more process. But we're supposed to start right now, our trust has been compromised. Until we're not going to build our trust again, nothing can happen. Nothing. And they need to show us that we can, it's really hard to say that, but we can trust them again. And we can, give them the, how to say, like, I know how to say it in Hebrew, but give them like kind of like, I don't know, the permissions or I don't know how to say it in English, but let's say give them our word, like our, let's say, how do you call it? Well, you know, when you come to propose, so yes,
yeah, like a truce.
And the dad gives you kind of like his word of like, okay,
yeah.
There is like a professional word for it. So, you know, I'm not thinking like, you know, to when he kind of like bless you with his bless so you can do it, until we're not going to build this trust again, and it's going to be hard, we cannot handle a two-state solution or even a one-state solution. But, you know, we're speaking about really like small matters. There is a huge matter that are in the room we have spoken about, and it's Iran. Iran is the head of all of this problem.
Yep.
Iran is manipulating the Yemens, Hezbollah, Hamas, and all of that. Until we're not going to handle Iran, those stuff are going to keep happening in the world because they are the source of all those terrorists.
That's proven knowledge.
Yeah, of course, 100%.
Well, hopefully someone goes in and destroys Iran. America?
No, God's will. America. God's will. I'm going to join them if they need me.
My hands up. I'm in. Again, 99% of my listeners will be in because, fuck that place. Now, mates, again, so basically in the next month or two, you're going to be back on the job, probably a bit more regularly until this is kind of simmered out a bit more. Mm. Over the time, you know, have you lost a lot of friends, you know, wounded in action?
So thanks God from my close friends and the permanent but I do know soldiers that are dead and, you know, Nova guys that got murdered and slaughtered, as I said before. I do have like friends other than the army and the Nova group, unfortunately, got caught in this event. It's hard because eventually everybody, Israel is a small place. Everybody knows everybody. So eventually, even if it's not a family member or your direct friend, it's a friend of a friend or a family member of a friend
someone
or
knows someone.
Stuff like this. Yeah, so we are all in a huge grief right now. And we need to, like, you know, continue our lives. We have our holiday these days. It's called Purim. It's kind of the Halloween. So we are dressing up and everything. And it's really hard to celebrate it, although it's supposed to be a really happy holiday. It's really hard to celebrate it regularly. But again, in the other way, we got to kind of like try to get back to our normal life and do smile sometimes because it's really needful to our mental health. So we're trying to, you know, a little bit of celebration, a little bit sitting down in the bars, and a little bit dressed up just to kind of like, you know, having this relief from all this stress that we are having since the 7th of October and also since this country started.
Yeah. Yeah, mate. Again, it's just complete madness. And, you know, I understand that, you know, just, I don't know why, you know, if Hamas didn't do what they did, it probably would not be talking.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
You know, like
everything happened for a reason. You know?
Exactly, mate. It's you know, Israel has my full support. I'll tell you that for a fact. And if anyone disagrees with it, then they don't have to listen no more. They can listen to something else.
Just like two slaps of like, yeah, yo, wake up, you dumb fuck.
Exactly, mates. This has just been incredible to hear. Obviously. First-hand account of what's happening in Israel, not to mention not even just recently, you know, your career as well, your life and your career and the unit that you worked for. It's Unit 217, is that right? That's the
217, exactly.
217. And great to hear, you know. I love hearing about other militaries in the world and it's incredible to hear, you know, what you've been through and what you're still going through. So, mate, just to tie off the podcast, just a couple of final questions, mate. I know we could talk forever about the whole. We might have to do. We might have to do an update in a couple of months.
100%.
We'll do an update and see where we're at. I think it'll be great. So, mate, just to tie off the podcast, couple of final questions. You know, what first question is: what advice can you give to people just to keep on keeping on, complete any goal they set their mind to, and just to crush it in life? And obviously, during these times in Israel now, to keep your head up, chin up high.
As you just said, keep your head up and chin up high. Be positive. Be positive. Be a great person. You know, it doesn't matter if you're woman, man, transgender, black, white, whatever. Be a human being. That's like what we are presenting. That's who we are. As I said, like I'm a nurse and I'm also a special forces guy. And this is the combination that we can do. And eventually we all lead by values. And those values of being a great human being that do care about other person, do have the critical judgment, the option to critical judge, act like a human being, not like the people in the 7th of October, and eventually believe in yourself. As I said, like I was a nurse, now I'm in the high-tech industry, but eventually everything that I did, I told myself, Shentov, you can do it. And then when you're repeatedly telling it to yourself and you do believe in your process, you're going to achieve everything. So this is my, wisdom words to the crowd here. Believe in yourself and be a human being.
Nice, mate. Nice. Mate, second question. What is the plans for the future? Obviously, you got to go back to, you still reserve time up until you're 42. You're only 29 now, so you still got 13 years to go.
Yeah. I'm doing it proudly.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's awesome. And obviously now, you know, it's a bit more stepped up, so you're a bit more busy. What else are you going to do? What are your plans? You're working the IT gaming side of things right now. I'm a gamer.
Yeah, I'm working.
I love it.
You're a gamer?
Yeah. Call of Duty. So, Call of Duty.
Really? Yeah. So I used to play Call of Duty Mobile a lot.
Yeah.
I came to become a legendary and also, like, you know, did some of that during some hard times, you know, when we had to just,
unwind.
Keep the time running.
Yep.
And other than that, so I'm working exactly in the gaming industry for mobile phone more, less than the regular ones. I got back to my team to play basketball and playing currently. We literally won by 30 yesterday, one of the teams that played against us. Had a great day. And, you know, just keeping up, with God's will, me and my girlfriend, and, you know, continue this amazing relationship with God's will, no jinx, and eventually get married, having kids. Of course, they're going to serve in the army. They're going to be respectful. They're going to have these amazing values that I have, that I got teach by my parents and the army as being Israeli, as being Jewish, and as being a person that lives in this amazing world. Yeah, that's my plan, you know, stay humble and just a normal life, you know.
Yeah, running. Yeah, right. Mate, third question. Now tell me something about you that people don't know, even your family members. You know, something maybe like a guilty obsession. You like to eat ice cream late at night.
Obsession. No, I don't have an obsession, but maybe there is two things. One thing that I did want to mention before and I couldn't, but as a nurse in the ER, I treated many terrorists that just committed a terror attack as an ER nurse. And think about that. I'm a special forces when they need me, but at the same time, because we're a democratic country, I also treat those people that try to arm us, you know, all my friends that are out there doing their missions, and we have to treat them so they can come to the trial, you know, and get the appropriate treatment. So think about how many terrorists I treated that committed a terror attack or planned to do a terror attack, and also people from Gaza that came to Israel to get the appropriate treatment. So this is one thing that is crazy and people don't really know about it. I spoke about it on my interviews, but people that knows me doesn't know it. And the second thing is that I almost died when I was in South America. I got stinged by stonefish.
Oh, did you?
Fish. Yeah, in my leg. I got 7 shots in my leg and 1 in my upper backside.
They say it's it's one of the most painful poisonous stings you can ever get.
First of all, it's the most poisonous fish in the sea. Second of all, it's really hurt, you know, and I was in Brazil, so the doctor that treated me didn't know English. So they literally showed me a Wikipedia page that shows the stonefish and what it is. And the first paragraph said, it's the most deadliest fish in the sea. Second of all, 30 minutes after you get poisoned, you're going to be paralyzed. And 3 hours after, you're going to be dead. This is the first paragraph that I read in, like, after I got stinged in the hospital.
Oh, shit. How long were you in hospital?
My parents doesn't know. One day. And they, like, just left me. Like you can go home. I was like, okay.
How long did the pain last?
So after the 7 shots and the one that I got in the ass, it was fine. But it was like, I don't know. It was, I don't even know the timeline that it happened. And the day after, I just started to play volleyball again, beach volleyball, just for fun. And then the day after, the poison probably striked again because it was kind of like, I don't know, maybe just dormant. And then my leg like swallowed up again. It was crazy. Yeah.
Wow. Mates, fourth question now. Favorite movie, TV show? What are you watching?
Star Wars.
Star Wars
and John Wick.
John Wick, yeah. John Wick's good.
Yeah, both of them. Both of them are my favorites.
Yeah, yeah. Are you talking the original Star Wars stuff?
Oh, I'm not the one with that. I'm not the one that I'm seeing today. This is like...
Yeah, man. I love
also
it as well.
Also, Lord of Rings, by the way. Lord of Rings are one of my favorites as well.
Yeah.
And I want to show you something cool. Maybe people are going to think I'm a nerd, but this is important. So, I'm a collector of, for example...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
So this is like the Star Wars one. Hey, sorry. Yeah, this is the Star Wars one, and this is the Lord of Rings one.
Oh, yeah. I bet you your girlfriend hates this.
I have any more, but she doesn't know even that I have it here. She didn't even notice.
She will when you get married, mate. Trust me.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Mates, fifth question. Favorite music artist, what are you listening to? You know, maybe when you're with the boys fighting a bit of war, what are you listening to?
I think that Eminem and Linkin Park.
Oh, Linkin Park. Yeah, good. Good stuff.
Both of them, I think, are my favorite.
Eminem's good too, yeah. Classic, all the old classic stuff, yeah.
Exactly.
Mates, one final question. I know you like your basketball, mate. Who is the GOAT? This one's a random
100%
question. 100%.
Michael Jordan. 100%. No.
Oh, here we go. I'm going to hang up right now.
The one and only, the Black Mamba, Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant, yeah.
That is the goal for me.
No, fair. Fair. I went to the US about 2 years ago now. It was 2 years ago or a year ago?
No, 2 years ago. It was... 2020, I think.
Yeah.
Corona year.
I hiked up to the crash site. It was
really?
Yeah, in Calabasas. Yeah, crazy.
Wow. It's crazy.
But outside of that, you're wrong, mate. It's Michael Jordan. Mate,
that's okay. Nobody can be perfect.
Mates, for whatever reason people want to get in contact with you, how can they find you?
Instagram, Facebook, feel free. Like I would love to answer some other questions that people have. You guys can follow. Right now I'm not uploading that much of a content about the war. I used to, but right now I'm trying to focusing on my real life, you know, the work and stuff. But I do upload every once and then, and you can ask and, you know, catch up and everything. Feel free. Yeah, I'm here for you guys, you know.
Yeah, awesome, mate. I'll tag you in on the post. So the listeners can reach
out.
Mate, again, really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing your story, mate. It's been absolutely incredible. Not to mention hearing you again, the firsthand account of what happened just most recently and, you know, the atrocities that it's outlaid over the last few months. It's been wild. So, mate, really, really appreciate you, you know, giving your time, mate, and obviously talking about it. That's one of the biggest things is, you know, a lot of people try and keep this stuff in, but you want to get, you know, the truth out there and you know, what exactly is happening, not what you see on CNN and all those other rubbish media outlets.
Exactly. And thank you for, you know, giving me this platform and giving your audience the option to listen to such an important matter. It means a lot to me because people need to know. And there is a lot of ignorance out there that's spreading some words and people don't know what to believe. And here you have somebody that experienced it from first sight. Like, so What's better than this?
No, exactly, exactly. Mate, for whatever reason, you know, hopefully I can come to Israel one day and we'll shoot some hoops.
Come.
I play a little basketball 100%. Too, yeah. I love it.
100%, bro. You're more than welcome to come here. From now, you have a new friend, so feel free, you know, to come here and enjoy this amazing country.
No, I appreciate it, mate. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good, brother. Have an amazing day.
Cheers, brother.
Wait, wait, wait. Now, quickly, just before you go, I want to tell you about 3-0's coffee. Now, as you know, I like my coffee how I like my men, long and black. However, lately, I've moved into the cold brews. I'm loving it, obviously, because the weather here in Australia at the moment is quite hot. So what I've been doing is using the Seasoned Campaigner pour-over filter bags, literally rip open the packet, put the filter bag over my coffee mug, few ice cubes, pour in some hot water, let it cool down, add a sugar or two just to make it sweet, and I fucking love them. Honestly, you get the kick that you need out of the caffeine and the taste is great. So if you want to get yourself a supply of coffee, head over to 30scoffee.com.au. From there, you can choose whatever you want. You've got the beans, you got the pour-over filter bags, got some merchandise, and just to let you know that a percentage of their sales is forwarded to organizations that support first responders. So while you're getting your coffee, you're doing a good deed by getting some of this money to the first responders and where it needs to go. While you're there, don't forget to use the discount code 3ZLimits. Now, look in our bio, you see that discount code, use it, get your discounts. So again, jump onto 30scoffee.com.au and grab yourself a supply.